The Performance Training Academy podcast series with today's guest, James Buckingham. My name is Ashley Hoff, and in episode number 10, we're discussing gut health. We'll be talking about the importance of having a healthy digestive system, what leads to poor gut health and essentially causes leaky gut. But we'll be talking about the foods that you can eat to improve your gut health and to help repair any issues. As always, this is related to what foods we are designed to eat and how this promotes optimal health. We hope you enjoy. Welcome back to the Performance Training Academy podcast series. My name is Ashley Hoff, and we are on episode number 10. And today we're discussing gut health with our nutrition expert, James Buckingham. There's going to be a bit of a theme going on through our podcast. If you've listened to any of the ones we've done before, especially with James Buckingham, the foods that we eat and survive on have a massive part to play on our overall health. Nutrition in the health and fitness industry especially can be is generally talked about and discussed as a way to meet a certain training goal, whether that be weight loss or muscle growth, which is obviously still important. You know, when we have training goals, we have to complement the training we do with the food that we eat to make sure we get that goal and all that the hard work pays off. But in the health and fitness industry, as we've reiterated quite a lot, the health side of things is often forgotten. So this is what today's podcast is about. We are bringing it back around to health again, talking about really what the body needs to be in a state of optimal health. When we deliver our level 3 personal training course, the students doing that course need to revise and understand a little bit about what the digestive system is. And I think at first, when you first start studying this, you think, why do I need to learn about the digestive system? I'm training to be a personal trainer. It's not just about exercise. Anatomy and physiology are a massively important unit in our course. Any fitness professional should have a good understanding of the body, but they should also have a massively a good understanding of what happens to our bodies under stress. Obviously, training being a stress, eating the wrong foods, which is also a stress on the body. So it's understanding about it's like outside to in. Like, yes, we focus on what the outside of the body is doing and how we look, the aesthetical side, but it is so important that we focus on the inside too, you know, and we can make a positive impact on our bodies by, you know, reducing stress, having balance to our training, having balance to our nutrition. And I must admit, the digestive system isn't talked about enough. And researching for this podcast today, I found it quite hard to find information, not that I was just that I was looking for, but that I could utilize and use in this discussion that we're going to have today. There seems to be a lot of stuff out there which doesn't really give you much actionable points. And there's a lot of content out there which kind of confuses the situation. But anyway, let's get on with our podcast. We're going to be speaking with James Buckingham in a minute. But it's a great one we got today, and I hope you can take some things from it. Gut health is massively important. Really is. And you'll see why as we discuss this podcast over the next hour. So here we are then with James Buckingham again, and today's podcast is a really good one because it's all about gut health. We've said many times on this series of podcasts and in our content that we put out on social media that it's about health. It's not just about the fitness side. So the health and fitness industry too often has a massive percentage of all its content geared towards the training, the fitness, and that side of things. And often enough, it's not spoken about in terms of health. So that's why we're doing our gut health today. There's lots of content that James has got planned to discuss with us. It's a fascinating topic again, and it does tie in with what we've been speaking about over our previous podcast, fasting and the foods that we should be eating and considerations. But I thought we'll start today's podcast. We started these podcasts in this state of lockdown for the coronavirus situation. It was one of the cases where we've been wanting to put a podcast series together for a while. And then since gyms closed and lockdown was in effect, we thought, what could we do? How could we carry on getting content out there? What could we do with this time that's given to us? And we thought, well, let's put a podcast series together. So that's what we've done. And obviously, James, you've been affected by this coronavirus situation. You are a gym owner. You own Precision Fitness and Performance, an independent gym in Exeter. How have you found it? Obviously, closing your gym was a bit of a big thing for you to do, right?
Well, I guess, like, yeah, yes, Ash, it's true enough. It's been, you know, everyone's in the same boat, of course, so I don't want to kind of bleat on too much about my little woes. But it's been a bit of a... The problem for a gym owner is, you know, you're trying to hold on to members or reimburse members or do something whilst giving them no product at all. So what I've tried to do is, like you've tried to do, I've tried to put a workout every day out and try to do as best you possibly can. So both gyms are obviously closed. But recently, I think as of today, good old Boris has said that we can meet in groups of up to six, so long as we meet 2 meters distance outside. So what I've done is extrapolated that and thought, well, blokes can train outside the gym because I've got, you know, equipment outside the gym, like atlas stones and stuff. And surely if you meet in the park for six people and keep 2 meters apart, you can train outside the gym. So, you know, I'm trying to do the best I can for members, and that's it. But actually, I was very lucky because the government gave me a grant, which massively helped. Otherwise, I'd be kind of squeaking at the moment. But I'm hoping that when we break up or when we crack on again in July, we can get back to normal. But I'm pretty sure it'll be a slow process because I'm pretty sure that in the nice weather, members will think, actually, I'll just stay carrying in my garage training. So I get it. So we're just going to have to work hard to get people back and give them what they need.
Yeah. That's and it is a case of that, isn't it? Obviously, when things do go back to normal and gyms can reopen, obviously, there's going to be a lot of practices in place that have got to be implemented to make sure that social distancing is to the bye-bye and there's no spread of this infection. But, you know, I think there will be a lot of people, as you rightly say, that are still happy to carry on training outdoors at home. And I think a positive from this horrible situation is it's made people realize that you can be a little bit more adaptive with your training. You know, you can think outside the box a little bit more. But I mean, I think a lot of people are going to be really excited and wanting to go back to a gym. For those people that train in a gym and in your gyms pretty much every day of the week, you know, they must be like itching to get back into it a little bit as well, eh?
Well, let's hope so. But yeah, let's hope so. I was talking to one of the Chiefs boys down outside my place yesterday, and he's just had a sandbag and he's done some great workouts, lifting, carrying, and doing all that stuff. And he's really enjoyed it. So I said, hey, join PFP, it's much better. So we'll see.
Well, it's that thing as well, isn't it? I think training at home is great. And obviously we did, I think our second podcast was about like home training considerations. Yeah. You can utilize the kit you have and utilize stuff like tempo to make it effective. But let's be fair though, training at home is great. I mean, for me, I don't mind training at home, but I find it quite hard mentally to really throw myself into it and to really give, you know, get that intensity for the session that it requires. And I think a lot of people are falling off that way now as well. When it all started, everyone was really, really keen training at home and posting it all over social media, which is great, obviously. But obviously, it gets to a point where you think, I just need to, because obviously there's training at home and it's so hard. Like you say, if you just got a sandbag, it's so hard to get the overload that your body requires for your end goal. And I was listening to something the other day where they say like exercise at home is exercise, but you can't train at home sometimes. It depends on your goal set and what you're doing, obviously, but having the load that you need to get that intensity is quite hard. But let's hope as soon as gyms open up again, mate, and your two as well, you know, people will be dying to get back in there. How have you found it yourself? Like, what have you been up to these last couple of months?
Quite antisocial. I've enjoyed it. I got a wooden squat rack made in my garage by one of the guys across the road, and I took some of the bars and plates from the gym. So I've actually been, to be fair, it's been really good. I've quite enjoyed the fact that I'm kind of isolated and just doing my own thing, but I'm a little bit different, aren't I, to most. So I don't really want people looking at me, so it's all right.
James, I know where you're coming from. I always get ribbed by my wife all the time, the fact that I'm not happy in my own little space, in my own little bubble. But, you know, that's
hi, Gemma.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, so I know you've been right. So your mindset through this whole thing has been good, hasn't it, really?
Yeah. And, all right, thank God.
And, you know, before we get into gut health, you're obviously, you own two gyms, one in Exeter, one in Columpton. You do still do personal training. Have you been able to start picking up with your clients again now as well?
Slowly, mate. Slowly. And rightly, people are cautious of the whole corona, apart from the business point. People are concerned about the health, and rightly so. But yeah, I'm doing the odd bits and pieces here and some consultations on Zoom and bits and pieces. So, you know, I'm keeping the wolf from the door, mate, so don't worry too much about me, but thank you very much.
Well, you know, we discussed this a couple of days ago, and obviously we tried to do this podcast a few days ago. Zoom wasn't playing up for us. All these like new age problems that we have nowadays. And I ended up doing a podcast on my own, just talking about my journey as a personal trainer through the industry and how Performance Training Academy came to be about. And obviously we reflected a little bit. It'd be good to do one where we discuss your background and your journey, because I, you know, I've known you for a good number of years, and I know you've got a great story, and not just in the health and fitness industry, but your time before that as well. So that's where we can discuss a lot more about your gyms and everything as well, because your gym, your facilities you have here are a great facility for personal trainers to utilize as well. I know one of our main tutors works out of your gym, has his personal training business from your gym. It's a great facility to utilize as a personal trainer. The setup that you have in terms of what they pay to use it is really fair. You're not kind of just taking all their money away from them. So that's definitely something we can discuss in a future podcast. Maybe over the next few, we'll get that one done as well.
Yeah.
But let's go into gut health then. So this ties in a lot to some of the podcasts we've done already. We've discussed fasting, food considerations that you should be eating. I think most people who listen to our podcast series and follow the content that we put out there can get a gist of, and even the nutrition course that we're putting together, obviously, which is a little bit on hold because of the situation. But they'll get the gist of the foods we massively influence is not just our goal, but our health. And that's where we've tried to really convey this message of eat local so that you know where your food is coming from. It's processed in the best possible way for our bodies. And the food choices you should be eating for everyone really is the meat, the fish, and the vegetables. The foods that Mother Nature provides us, right? So that's kind of the current theme that we've had across this podcast series, and which we'll continue to have. And I know that's a theme that goes for our nutrition course that we're doing with you as well. Obviously, gut health, the topic of gut health, really brings that to play about, because obviously we think about the foods we eat as an outcome goal, you know, what it's going to do for us, how it's going to make us feel, how it's going to make us look. It's often forgotten about what happens to that food once we consume it. So let's start with that. Gut health, how would be the best way you would think to introduce this? I know we discussed before we went on about the process food takes through our body and how our body utilizes that food and how it passes it through our system. Let's do that. Let's start with a little bit of an introduction about digestion. You know, what happens to food once we eat it?
That's a good one, mate. So I think to sum the whole thing up really, Ash, is people say we are what we eat, but actually it's more we are what we assimilate and absorb, you know, so therefore that's the whole essence of digestion and assimilation and how the nutrients get into our target cells. So we are what we can assimilate or digest, basically. So to understand that, a real quick snapshot of when we eat our food, what happens, you know, we start chewing our food, but actually people forget that's arguably one of the more important things, chew food properly. And we start breaking down carbohydrates in our mouth straight away. Once we've chewed the food and we swallow it, it goes into our stomach, and the stomach isn't just a bag where it sits. Immediately, HCl or hydrochloric acid is released to start breaking down that food. And that's the ground zero. It's the most important thing, really, at this stage. If we've got adequate hydrochloric acid in our system, that will stimulate digestive enzymes to be released in order to help the battle to break down the food in our stomach only. So key point, hydrochloric acid needs to be optimal, which it very often isn't. And digestive enzymes need to be released. Very often they aren't, so problems can come. Anyway, after a time, the food is broken down and then starts to enter our small intestine, or long intestine is probably a better way of saying it, because it's up to about 22 feet long. And that's where the food particles get broken down in various sections. You know, it takes a long, long time. And there's little villi, so the tube is like this, but there's little villi to increase the surface area so the nutrients can get extracted more efficiently. So that's all well and good, but sometimes due to stress, lifestyle, non-steroid anti-inflammatories, incorrect food choices, gluten, gliadin, wheat products, you know, all that stuff, that the junction of our stomach can open, and that causes a leaky gut, and that's more problems I'll come back to. Anyway, the food carries on down, absorb. The pancreas releases enzymes, bile is released via the liver to break down fats, that those nutrients then that are absorbed go either into lymph for fat or the bloodstream to go to the liver in the case of carbohydrates and protein, and then repackaged. So you can see the liver's involved. Then the food goes down to a large intestine, which is small, which is interesting. We can talk about vegetation and all that business. Well, water's extracted and then, you know, out to our rectal and then out. So that's basically how it works. But when the nutrients come through our small intestine absorbed into the bloodstream and or lymph, they go to the liver to be repackaged. So you can see that's quite an important thing. So I'll just highlight some glaring problems that can happen. One is we don't chew our food correctly. Two is we're not producing enough stomach acid or digestive enzymes or bile, i.e. break down food bits. Mm-hmm. And three is our digestive system, our digestive line, can be open or leaky, which shouldn't be, you know, food particles go through. And then the final problem really at our level, Ash, is simply that we might not have enough proflora or gut bacteria in order to A, proliferate, and two, do its job of producing short chain fatty acids.
Yeah.
Which therefore affect all sorts. Anyway, I've waffled on a bit too long.
No, that's good. So what you've given us there is a real good summary of what happens to food when we eat it. And I think the key thing to point out, these are all elements that our bodies should be doing as efficiently as it possibly can. And we can help our bodies do that by eating the right foods. That's what it comes down to. So let's start, you know, chewing. It sounds like such a stupid teaching someone how to suck eggs thing to do. But, you know, chewing comes into the nutritional and the health and fitness industry quite a lot, doesn't it? You know, if people just like wolf down their food really, really quickly, A, they don't know when they don't get that signal that they're full quick enough or to the brain or whatever it may be. So they just eat and eat and eat. And all of a sudden they realize, oh, I'm actually really bloated. I've eaten too much. So it's a case of just chewing your food to slow down and just to make sure you eat the right amount for starters. But it's not just a case of chew your food for that reason. It's a case of chew your food because that's the first part of the digestive process, isn't it?
Yeah. You're right, Ash. And funnily enough, if you eat the right things, like animal protein, it takes a while to chew it if you can do it correctly, you know? But and therefore, there's a time lag, isn't there? By the time the food hits your stomach to that signal from to tell your brain that, you know, you've eaten enough food, calm down. But because food is so delicious nowadays, sugary and high fatty and horrible, not too lovely, I should say, not horrible. You know, you woof it down. And you know, as you rightly say, the signals can, it's lag, there's a time lag, firstly. And there's something else I was going to mention there. And with a modern day, we're so stressed, you know, got to ram food down my face. So you can see, chewing, although it's not a sexy subject, it's really quite important.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we teach digestion's part of the syllabus for the personal training course. And I think there's been a lot of students come into it. And why am I learning about the digestive system? You know, that's not related to exercise in any way.
It really is.
And I think once you understand the body and you understand nutrition, you understand the digestive system is has a massive factor to play in terms of our outcome goals, you know, and that's something that should be addressed with your clients, isn't it? And I know from you going into further studies in nutrition, it's how you deal with your clients. You don't just say like, eat this. It's a case of like explaining why they should eat these certain foods and what happens to them when they eat these certain foods as well. So chewing is a key thing. And you're right, you know, when something tastes really nice, normally because it's been processed or there's trans fats added to it or something like that, like we all love a takeaway every now and then or a kebab, it's very easy to get the taste sensation, so you eat it too quickly. One other thing I'd like to touch on there as well is digestive enzymes. Now, these are formed by the body, produced by the body, right? Where does it come in where you can supplement? And we'll talk about supplements later on as well, obviously.
Yeah.
But should you supplement with digestive enzymes, or if you're getting the right foods, should your body have enough?
That's a good question, mate, but it's not really that. We should be able to produce these things, all the, you know, digestive enzymes, HCl being the first most important, hydrochloric acid. But because of, so to recap, mate, when the food hits our stomach, it releases, the stomach will go, food, I need to break that down, and I'll produce hydrochloric acid, the first thing. when we've got adequate hydrochloric acid, that stimulates also pancreas to release enzymes, as well as enzymes within your gut. So what I'm saying is hydrochloric acid is the key thing. If that's not there, other things don't get stimulated. They don't get turned on to come in. So it's not sexy at all, but HCl is the key thing. And I'll come back to you, answer your question fully in a moment. But when I'm under a huge amount of stress, one of the byproducts of stress, as well as, you know, the other obvious things we know about, is it reduces our ability to produce hydrochloric acid. So automatically, you see, if you're stressed, you won't be able to digest your food. So you can go and get the most organic, grass-fed, blah, blah, blah food in the world, but you're not really digesting it properly from this very, very start. So when I speak, it's a bit more complicated when we talk how to suss out on a client or a person, but we are what we assimilate. So very often, if someone isn't digesting their food very well, they feel bloated, lethargic, they've got psoriasis, they've got autoimmune issues, asthma even, it's a clue that the gut health isn't optimal. So very often you'll think, take a digestive enzyme or hydrochloric acid to break down the food, and that can be supplemental. And it's not a bad thing initially to be supplemental. And as we age, our ability to produce hydrochloric acid is scuppered slightly.
Yeah.
And then I won't talk about the gut lining just yet, mate, but I can come back to that. So to answer your question, we shouldn't have to take hydrochloric acid or digestive enzyme. You put them all into one lump, you know, digestive enzymes. We shouldn't really need to, but as we get older, as we stress, which everyone's stressed, you will not be able to break down your food properly, and that's just a given. Things that cause stress is lifestyle. Excess training is a big one. I was talking to one of the Chiefs boys yesterday about this. And if you, let's say you're a rugby player at professional level, and you're going to battle every Saturday, those guys' guts are very often in a terrible state because it's stress. You know, whether the stress comes from relationship, food choices, incorrect nutrition, training stress, the body doesn't differentiate. It still reduces our ability to produce hydrochloric acid. I think I'm waffling on a little bit too long, but yeah, you can supplement with it, mate. That's just the first part, you know?
Yeah.
Then we can talk about the gut lining if you want later on.
Yeah. And to be fair, the reason I asked about digestive enzymes, there's lots of diets out there, right? So diet should be, the food we eat should be what our body needs. There shouldn't be this one key diet. The diet is what it is, isn't it? We need meat, we need fish, we need vegetables, right? Fruits as well. So that should be the foods that we consume. But there's lots of diets out there which, whether they're eliminating one of those food groups or eliminating a certain macronutrient, but I've been offered as a fitness professional, as I'm sure you have been as well, to sell a specific diet. And I'm not going to start naming any diets or bad mouthing any or anything like that. But one of these diets in particular that I got asked to promote to my clients and even as running this training academy to our students to promote to their clients. You can see there's that whole pyramid scheme thing going on there. And the fact is, you know, I could have made some money out of it, but I just did not agree with what the principles of this diet, which was effectively a liquid diet, a shake diet. There was food involved as well. It wasn't like 100% just drink this shake three times a day, you'll lose weight or anything like that. It was very much geared towards the weight loss. But the one thing that really stood out to me was the fact, like they say, right, so yes, they can have X amount of food. I don't even know what the balance was now, but they had to have like two or three of these shakes per day. First of all, liquid shakes as well. You know, it affects our digestive system, which I'm sure you can clear up on in a second. But the other thing they were trying to get us to do was sell a digestive enzyme to go with that shake. So am I right in saying the reason why they were so key on saying, get your clients to have these shakes, which I'd just like to say I never did, get your clients to have these shakes, but make sure they take this digestive enzyme as well. There's a bit of a clue there, isn't it? That yeah. If you're just going to have shakes and not bulk and food, there's going to be some issues there, isn't there?
Yeah, I think I should go back to our hunter-gatherer times. You know, we shouldn't really be drinking our calories. And I've got quite strong views on the whole calorie thing anyway, but we shouldn't be drinking it unless it's the blood of the animal you just killed. Yeah. And that's quite important, you know?
Yeah.
And of course we can have dairy, pros and cons of dairy, that's another subject. But we should be eating food that we have to chew. And remember, we chew it and that prepares the gut. The gut goes, oh, there's food coming. I'll start producing pancreatic juices, for want of a better word, you know, HCL, digestive enzymes. But if I simply get even orange juice or a shake, and we'll talk about shakes in a minute around training, and I just chuck it down, there's none of that. The body isn't ready. So it hits my stomach and the body goes, Jesus, what? This is, whoa, what's happening? This isn't natural. Mm. And then you have this whole, you know, cascade of shit me, what's going on?
Yeah.
So that's the first point. It kind of bypasses one of the key start points of digestion. Secondly, if you just take, let's say, a protein shake, which we all use occasionally for training and stuff, and there's nothing wrong with that necessarily, but one around training is okay because it spikes your insulin, which you might want after training. But if you're taking three or four of these a day, you're spiking your insulin all the time. That's horrendous. Mm. You know, that's, you know, what goes up must come down, and the cortisol kicks in and blood sugar's all over the place. So yeah, I think drinking your calories is a big, big mistake. And I could talk about that for a long time about the negative effects of it. But to clear that up, if you're going to have some form of shake, I would, around training was when I'd have it, probably after training, and you can add bits to it, but that's okay. And the other thing about these shakes, to make them nice, is they're sucralose and all sorts of shit in them. But I'll get off my high horse.
You know what? No, I know your views on it is very similar to mine as well. There's nothing wrong with, like, as we said, and we've got planned in our content list to do a podcast about supplements. Protein shakes and stuff we'll probably touch upon towards the end of this podcast a little bit as well. They can be beneficial, but I think
absolutely.
Following a diet which takes food out of the equation and you're replacing a lot of it with a liquid form of food, it's not the best way. And it's always geared towards weight loss as well, isn't it? And it's very susceptible to people that, you know, people who want to lose weight can be quite easy targets a little bit. It's a bit like personal trainers and marketing. They can be quite easy targets in that sense as well. And it's a real shame, isn't it? Because what we should be educating everyone, no matter what your product is that you're trying to sell, we should all be educating anyone to be eating the right foods. And that's what it boils down to, isn't it? You know, not trying to sell a product, a shake or anything like that. And it always kind of stuck home with me, the whole digestive enzyme thing, you know, supplementing them because you're taking food out of the equation. I think, well, where's the health side to this? You know, yes, you might. And I've known people to do these shake diets, and I've known people to lose weight on them as well. But then you think, well, is that the main goal that you want? Don't you want to be healthy as well? You know, and you can lose weight by having the right foods. That's what it boils down to, isn't it? Stress was something that I know we're going to talk about a lot. You know, stress is a massive factor when it comes to gut health. And I think we can all feel that. You mentioned just then about the Exeter Chief player, and I think we can relate to that in a way. If even someone who's not a professional athlete, if we've got an event coming up, whether that be a long endurance run or a game, a match or whatever it may be, you get those nerves, you get those feelings, don't you? And it's a bit of stress coming into it. And if you're having that every single week, it must be like have a bit of a detrimental factor to the whole thing, doesn't it? So stress comes in many forms, doesn't it? And as you touched upon, you know, stress can be in a relationship. It can be a financial thing. It can be many, many different things. And I think pretty much everyone listening to this has probably gone through some form of stress in their lives. And you can feel that when you're stressed, you feel it here, don't you? You feel it in your gut. And that's hard to deal with, isn't it? And it's not a nice sensation to have. And am I right in saying that feeling of stress, if it's constant and it's there, that will have a damaging effect, won't it? You've already touched on that, but it will.
So you're right, Ash. So, I mean, the very fact that high cortisol, we could talk about, you know, where we're storing fat and metabolizing. The whole point of cortisol is to metabolize nutrients so we can use them. So we won't touch on the fat gaining parts of cortisol. And cortisol isn't a bad thing occasionally, as we know, you know, especially in the morning and around training. Mm. But the two things that at this digestion podcast to talk about really is, firstly, high stress, constant, you know, constant high stress will deplete our ability to produce hydrochloric acid and therefore digestive enzymes. That's the first point we need to speak about, or we've covered really. And then probably the most important thing really, Ash, from a health point of view is the downstream. Once the food particles have or haven't been broken down correctly, depending on bits, then it enters this long intestine. Mm. And because stress, poor food choices, like we're talking about gluten, wheat, anything that causes an inflammatory response within the body, stress for sure, it opens the gut wall lining. So the cell membrane, the small intestine should be tight junctions, but those junctions, given the stress and the things I just spoke about, open, and that's what's known as leaky gut. And now you can see particles that should be going through the lining are now open, That then goes, you know, these particles are going through, and they can be pathogens, viruses, large food particles that haven't been broken down correctly. And the body's reacts, of course, it's in my blood now. So the body goes, oh, what the hell's this? And white blood cells then, like Pac-Man, start to go, oh shit, I'd better sort this out, which is their job. That's the immune function. It's an autoimmune function.
Yeah.
But where it comes out of hand is when your gut line is everything you bloody eat, it's perforated. Mm. So now the poor old autoimmune function is constantly going crazy. Mm. And that's where we have these skin breakouts, arthritis, poor brain function, chronic fatigue and lupus. And there's a million one, even really poor energy, which you talk about for training, you know. So mm. it's really important that the gut lining is intact. Mm. But as I say, those things that I mentioned can make it, you know, the lining open. Therefore, you know, we're just particles get into our body.
Yeah.
So we can rectify that, but I'll talk about that later.
Yeah, and leaky gut is a common thing for a lot of individuals as well, isn't it? And it's a case of you want your body to perform and be at its optimum and it's at its healthiest. And a leaky gut is definitely detrimental to all of this, isn't it? And it can be brought about by stress. What other factors can cause leaky gut? Obviously, it's the foods we eat as well. The foods we eat will have a massive impact on that as well, won't they?
If we're eating an incorrect food choice, food in inverted commas, you know, something that's, it's the obvious, but processed food and the like. But one of the main things that people talk about is wheat products and or gluten, gliadin, which therefore kick in a thing called zonulin, but I don't want to go too technical. But if we have the wrong type of food choices, and the right type is, you know, I'm quite strongly viewed, it should be simple animal protein, animal products, and some fruit and vegetables if you need them. If we have the wrong food, the body is going to react by going, what the hell is this? So the list is endless. Mm. And but stress, incorrect food choices, non-steroid anti-inflammatory, you know, drugs, alcohol, sadly, illness, injury, when I say, I want to reiterate the stress thing, because if I eat the wrong food choices, it's the stress that causes the stress. See what I mean? So stress is involved with everything. Mm. And then to hammer the point home about, okay, the food isn't now going efficiently down through my, you know, my intestinal wall. It's now perforated too quickly. Mm. Obviously, it will go through my wall, but that's for digestive purposes. But if it's leaking too quickly into my bloodstream, then the body has an inflammatory, has a autoimmune response, and excess autoimmune response causes the thing that everyone talks about, inflammation. Mm. And you can see inflammation starts in the gut and affects your brain, affects your body, affects arthritis, affects your performance, affects your energy production, affects sexual, you know, the whole, everything. Mm. So, you know, in the fitness industry, you should at least be aware of autoimmune function, which isn't rocket science, just white blood cells doing the thing, but when it goes out of hand, the inflammatory response of that and how it affects people's performance. You know, you're talking about career athletes that are trying to, you know, make a living, and they're highly inflamed. They're not going to last long. And no. That's the truth. Like,
and that's the key as well, isn't it? If your gut line is damaged, you're going to get this inflammatory response around the body, and that leads to illness, disease, and everything, doesn't it? Sort of thing. And so that's where it comes down to the health side. You know, we want to have longevity in life. We want to go through life as well as we possibly can, keeping our bodies, our shells as good as we possibly can keep them. You don't want to be messing it up by living completely stressed all the time, inflamed. It's not going to be, you can kind of, I think anyone listening to this can kind of, like, with a common sense, can see what the outcome is going to be. You know, it's going to lead to illness, disease, and you're not going to feel good, are you?
No. And just to have the point, from a fitness industry point of view, a lot of the guys are in the fitness industry because they love to train, or athletes do the train. But what happens is we're training constantly at full bore, and that's a stress. And you're doing that every day. You can see now we're talking about chronic stress.
Yeah.
And that a lot of guys that I speak to in the CrossFit community back in the day when it first started, they were chronically stressed, and they ripped up these boys and girls, but their inflammation markers were huge. You know, the CRP markers and all that were really quite high. So what I'm saying is stimulate and then recover. We forget that, don't we? Mm-hmm. We just stimulate, train, 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 but we forget the recovery, calm down, all that stuff.
Yeah, it's like everything. It's about balance, isn't it? Training, you can definitely train hard, but you need to find balance in your training. It's again something that we've touched upon. It's probably once we start doing some more podcasts about the training side of things, not just nutrition, it's something that we'll definitely look at about how to balance your training, still get the most out of yourself with those harder, high intense sessions, but also with the more lower intense ones as well. Okay, let's move on a little bit then. So we're going to bring all of this full circle. I know we are. Stress will come up again. We'll talk about leaky gut again. Gut bacteria. Now, this comes up quite a lot, doesn't it? Gut bacteria. We have good bacteria. We have bad bacteria. One thing that we chatted about before we started recording this was about how, you know, for me to recap some stuff and to learn some stuff before we went and chatted about gut health, I really struggled to find anything definitive and helpful around gut health. A lot of articles you can read, other podcasts and stuff like this as well, pretty much go on the whole basis of gut health is easy, just eat fruits and vegetables and lots of fiber and you're giving yourself everything you need. This is something that we'll cover more so in a bit as well. And obviously it's all about balancing the bacteria in your gut as well, isn't it? So we have, was it millions, trillions of bacteria in our guts. We want to make most of that good bacteria, very little of that bad bacteria. Let's touch on that a little bit. And it comes down to the foods we eat. The foods we eat, the bacteria feed from, don't they?
Yeah.
What's your opinion?
You're right.
Good and bad.
So you're right, Ash. So as I say, I'll keep reiterating back, you know, first port of call really is we chew the food, then it goes to our stomach for the mechanical breakdown, as you know, hammering the point again, hydrochloric acid, digestive enzymes, mechanically breaking down the food. Then the food goes into our intestinal tract and starts getting absorbed correctly through the villi, not through holes in the junction, you know, holes in the wall, but through the villi as it's supposed to be. And then it travels down into my, you know, eventually, after interacting with bile salts and blah, 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 then goes to the large intestine, which is actually quite small. Anyway, it's basically, there's gut bacteria all over the place within our gut, but basically we talk about in the lower intestine, don't we? And that's fine. So people say in order to feed the gut flora, gut animals, gut bugs, you need to eat a lot of vegetation. And that's true in a way. So the gut flora will sit in there doing its thing, good or bad. And whatever you eat, whether it be Twinkies or steak or spinach or whatever it might be, the gut flora will react in a certain way. It'll proliferate from it. But the point is, the gut bacteria will change for good or for bad, depending on what you eat. So if I just eat vegetation all the time, yes, you'll produce a lot of food for the gut bacteria. But is it necessary? You can arguably, and there's more studies coming out now saying that if you eat on the other extreme, a carnivore diet, then the gut bacteria will change and optimize and adapt to that nutrition. See what I'm getting at? And the thing about that is, I'll come back to it full circle in a minute, but the thing about that is you one of the byproducts of the interaction of food with our gut flora is the production of butyrate short chain fatty acids. And why are they important? Because short chain fatty acids heal, stimulate, repair, feed the gut lining. So that's why people talk about short chain fatty acids, what it does to the gut, heals it. And people say, well, you need vegetation for that. But actually, it's proven now that you don't. Ketones will do just the same thing. Then we can talk about ketones, fat adaption, blah, blah, blah. You can see how it ties in. Anyway, that's a bit of a big old subject. But if you... Can I waffle on for a little bit longer?
Carry on, yeah.
So if I eat a lot of vegetation and nothing else, it'll pass through my digestive system really, really quickly, hit my lower intestine, where it interacts with the gut flora to produce short-chain fatty acids, you know, fiber and all that stuff. But you're pooing yourself all the time, and it's attached to oxalate. These nutrients have oxalates and lectins and phytic acids in them that can cause a whole host of detrimental things to our body and also stop us chelating nutrients from proper food. I shouldn't say proper food, I get in trouble. So you can see, clearly I'm not bashing vegetables necessarily as they're terrible, but their foods that you simply can survive on, whereas animal protein is food that you can survive on or thrive on. Mm. I'm not sure if I made that little explanation well.
Yeah, you did. Because it comes down to as well, doesn't it? Speed of digestion, transit through the digestive system, isn't it? And again, it comes down to let's talk now as if we're chatting with people who do eat animal products and they have a little bit of vegetables to go with that as well. It's all about balance, is getting it the right way. So for example, if someone predominantly eats more vegetables or fruits, and I've dealt with clients in the past who would consider themselves have a very healthy diet, but if you look at it, it's like very high in like fruit, fructose throughout the day, and it's deemed to be a healthy way to eat. But then there's very low protein levels, whether that comes from plant or animal or whatever, but there's very low protein levels in their diet. And then, you know, but if you are eating predominantly vegetables and fruits, it's going to, and again, a lot of fiber, which is deemed to be a good thing for this. And that's a whole nother podcast that we can do about fiber. It's the speed of digestion, isn't it, which is affected.
I'm glad you brought that up, Ash. So two things pop out there. If you have to be aware of the fact that we've got a lot, our initial small intestine, which is long, that's why it's long, it's 22 odd feet long. And the reason it's that long, because it should take us a long time for the nutrients we've eaten to go through that system. You know what I mean? It shouldn't go eat and 4 hours later, pop out my bum type of thing, because we're not digesting it fully. So you have to consider, and I can't give a definitive answer really, but certainly I used to say, you know, you need to be pooing 3 or 4 times a day and that's optimal, and maybe not, but I think if we eat the correct thing, let's say, you know, I'm a big fan of eating animal produce, and you eat a piece of steak with some liver. That should take a long time to go through my system so the body can absorb all those nutrients out of it. So that when I poo it out, it's actually not much at all. The volume is small. Mm. You know, people look in the bowl and go, oh, but that's good because you're extracting nearly all those nutrients out. When I have a big, massive bowl of salad with a piece of chicken or whatever, or a piece of fish, which, okay, that deemed to be healthy, and I'm not here to discuss that at the moment, but from a speed of digestion point of view or speed of travel, then the fish, which I'd be most interested in, which is fatty acids and protein and all that good stuff, is transported through my system fairly quickly because of the fibrous vegetables, which aren't digestible necessarily, and all of a sudden it's in the toilet bowl. So is that correct? And you my answer is no, but I'm sure other people will argue that point, and I'd listen to them, of course. But the speed of digestion. So I'm not saying, once again, that vegetation is bad, but some vegetation is. And if you were going to choose something, I would go more tuberous, you know, plants, more tuberous vegetables and more fruit. But touching then on the subject of the fructose and fruit, there's nothing wrong with eating banana or an apple or an orange, because the fructose content is small and that goes to replen the liver. Fine, you know, you need 150 grams of glycogen in the liver, mainly coming from fructose. But if I'm eating just fruit all the time, that's going to cause actually fatty liver. And therefore my digestive ability from bile and also the very fact that the liver is that filter, it's not optimal because I've got a fatty liver caused by excess fructose, excess fruit, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
You know, it's very difficult to eat 5 oranges, but it's very, very simple to drink 5 oranges.
Yeah.
So it's what I'm getting at. So yeah. I'm not bashing fruit, and I certainly would add fruit to food throughout the day, mainly citrus fruit, apple, berries, that type of thing. And I'd normally have it in the evening and try to go near as damn it carnivores throughout the day, you know. But we could talk about maybe meal planning another day, Ash, what do you think?
Yeah, 100%. Because again, it comes down to, it's back to that keyword of balance as well, isn't it? Like fruit is not bad for you. And my point just now was the fact that fruit is made out to be the stuff that we should be eating, but then people can take that to literally and just live off fruits all day long as well. And you can see the effect of fructose as well. If you give a banana to your kid as well, it's fine. But if you give them a big bowl of fruit salad as well with some orange juice, they go hyper for about an hour. Do you know what I mean? It's that whole
don't do that.
Effect. It's the whole effect it has on the body, isn't it? You know.
The one thing I just want to point out there is what was I talking about? The fructose thing. If we, as I say, that quite important to remember that if you have a load of fructose, it will a similar effect to alcohol on the liver. I'm not saying, you know, fruit juice and a bottle of whiskey is the same, but my point is it's metabolized in the liver, and too much causes fatty liver. Mm. And therefore, the liver cannot do its job. And liver arguably is the most important organ, you know, from a digestion and filtering point of view and detoxification point of view. So, yeah, as you say, just to hammer that point really, if I may, is to a piece of fruit isn't a bad thing. Of course it's not. And you can talk about the extremes. You know, vegans, they're extreme, and they, you know, talk about plant protein, blah, blah, blah. It's not very bioavailable. Or you can talk about the carnivores, and they're extreme as well. But actually, they're both probably wrong, aren't they? You know, a carnivore, you're not telling me you've got to eat nose to tail all the time, every day, when actually a hunter-gatherer would have seen an apple and I'll have that as well. Do you know what I mean? So actually, yeah, they're both maybe too extreme, but
yeah,
I'd gear towards more carnivore myself.
Yeah,
but with a bit of, anyway.
Yeah, that's it. And it's definitely, I mean, my beliefs are, I do eat meat, so I do most of my meals that I have, or every meal I have really throughout the week, is based around, I put my protein first, whether that be meat, fish, dairy, whatever, and I will have some vegetables to complement that as well. I will have some fruit throughout the day as well. I have a banana. I'm not a massive fruit eater. I don't like go to my fruit bowl like 3 or 4 times a day, but you know, I will have a piece of fruit every now and then, but it's not my go-to. Do you know what I mean? So I know though, so long as and this is how I feel. And you mentioned about the you know, the poo side of things. And one phrase that I like that you used on our nutrition course was the clue is in your poo. And it comes down to the fact that it's a big part of digestive health, isn't it? And that's why, if you see nutritionists on a TV or something like that, they're analyzing the poo samples and stuff like that. But there's clues in that, isn't it? And we won't dwell on that too much because it's not a sexy topic to talk about in the slightest. But I think you know that if you have a diet predominantly on vegetables, how it comes out the other end is completely different to how you have a diet based around some protein, let's say meat, for example, with a smaller amount of vegetables coming in the day. And again, a case of, you know, if you do live off too much fiber, and again, this is what I kept coming back to when I was doing a little bit of research for this, I kept coming back to the fact that everyone was saying, I saw a lot of times fruit, vegetables, fiber equals digestive health. And I know there's elements in that they've got some probably key points why it is good. But, and this is me speaking from experience, if I live off vegetables, lots of fiber, which again is very easy to do. It's very easy to have a diet which is excessive in carbohydrates, lots of starch, lots of fiber, lots of vegetables and all this sort of stuff. How it comes out the other end is completely different to how it comes out if you've got a good balance of protein first, animal-based protein with some vegetables on the side. There's a massive difference. And I guess if anyone wants to trial any of this and take any actions from it, have a look yourself about, you know, how it is different if you're eating predominantly protein animal sources with some vegetables to what it's like when you live in a week where you're having lots of carbohydrates and lots of vegetables. It's completely different, isn't it?
Send photographs to Performance Training Academy. Mate, I'll just touch on something to clear that up because I don't want to leave it too wishy-washy.
Mm.
If one of the reasons people talk about fiber is so important is its interaction with the gut flora, right? Mm. And, you know, pass foods quickly through. But it's interaction with the gut flora. And they say, you know, rightly, you know, it'll produce short-chain fatty acids, repair the gut, all that stuff. That's true. But it's not the only way, as I said earlier. Exactly the same short-chain fatty acids are produced when we're in ketosis or eating, you know, high-fat, I shouldn't say high-fat, but animal protein exclusively.
Mm.
So, you know, the carnivore guys, they're on to a case as well. They're producing the same thing. Remember, the gut flora will change according to what you eat. So that's the first point. Secondly, when you talk about poo ash, it's worth mentioning that my life before this was in the army. And one of the jobs, it used to be in the Far East, I don't want to go too boring the ass off people. But one of the jobs when we were recceing things was to find their latrine and have a look at their poo. You know, these are the, you know, people were kind of like looking out for. And we'd analyze it just by looking at it and we'd be able to tell how healthy they were.
Mm.
So, you know, even the army.
Yeah.
So that's another story. But what we can touch on really to about the poo thing is a good consistency. And if you're, I spoke about it earlier on, but if you're a one wiper, then that is a really good clue that you're eating the right thing. Mm. But if you're out of poo and you're having to, sorry about this, wipe your bum 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times, then there's a clue that perhaps you haven't eaten the right thing. But yeah. I can talk about it another day.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but it is important because that's what, it's the end result of digestion, isn't it? You know, so it all plays a role. So let's just like kind of bullet point then. So the, what can affect gut health, what can cause leaky gut, which then leads to inflammation, which can then lead into poor health, disease, etc. Effectively, I mean, the key, the easy one is processed foods and trans fat foods. And again, it's very easy to live off processed foods. A lot of people might think they're eating healthy if they're buying these ready meals and stuff like that as well, which are deemed and packaged to be healthy meals. But again, it's very easy to live a lifestyle where throughout the week, you're not cooking very much yourself from raw products and you're basically living off processed foods, not just takeaways, but stuff that's been made in a factory, had additives, chemicals, flavorings, and all this sort of stuff. Processed food is a biggie when it comes to damaging your gut lining and everything as well, isn't it?
So when people talk about the ASH, yes, there's billions of these things that aren't necessarily good for us, but the main ones, in order to bullet point it, is usually wheat products and gluten being, you know, what people talk about. And I think rightly so. Mm. If you were to, you know, I'm not going to say I am anti-gluten, but if you were to deplete wheat products from your diet, you'd lose weight, you'd lose fat, you'd lose water, as in water weight, and your gut health would improve dramatically. So that'd be one real simple point. Two is if you know, I'm hinting that meat is probably a really good thing to eat. And when I may say meat, I mean nose to tail, fish, chicken, fowl, you know, beetles, all sorts. Mm-hmm. But it's got to be from a good quality source, because if it's poor quality meat, like you just mentioned, processed, it can be high in omega-6s compared to omega-3s, and that therefore causes an inflammatory response as well. So you can see it's all really connected. We should really just eat what is a natural food for us. Mm. So the analogy being, which is better, steak or corned beef? Steak. Yeah. You know what I mean? So anyway, follow back. So to answer your question, from a gut health and leaky gut perspective, wheat is a lot, soya, non-steroid anti-inflammatories, stress. But nutritionally, wheat and wheat type products are what can and will cause leaky gut type situations. And remember, the leaky gut, the body goes, the gut is leaking into my system. I've got to do something about it. Immune function kicks in, rightly. But when that immune function goes too much, then C-reactive proteins up, and then we have the autoimmune things, brain, skin, muscle, arthritis, incorrect performance, weakness, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Hopefully that bullet points that at least made. Mm. Soya is another one. I hate to say it, but soya is really inflammatory when it, and GMO type products, GMO, you know, it's not natural.
Yeah.
Can I just touch quickly on, to clear up the thing about, people might have picked up, I said about vegetation. In theory, it's okay, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
But actually, a lot of vegetation type food has got these, I mentioned before, about what we call anti-nutrients, and also they chelate or chlor out or stop us absorbing nutrients from other good quality foods. And those, if people can Google it, lectins, phytic acids, oxalates, especially oxalates. And they can cause all sorts, even kidney stones, you know. It's quite a lot of damage it can do in the long term, and a lot of it. If you're having a bit of salad every now and then, that ain't going to hurt you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're having it all the time, then you are in for it'll catch you in the ass, I reckon. Mm. Sorry, I'll bang on about that, mate.
So that's obviously what can cause. I think the key thing to come out from this podcast is what can repair, you know, what foods, and I think that the theme has already been laid down, but what foods and what dietary considerations should people be making? Because you can repair a leaky gut, can't you? You can repair your digestive system. You can bring yourself, if you're in a poor health, and I've worked with clients who have had very poor diets. They do live off very much, their daily intake consists of just pretty much carbohydrate with a very low amount of protein, whether that comes from, you know, and that was again from starches, pastas, and all this sort of stuff as well. So it's very easily eaten foods, easily prepared foods. obviously a lot of processed foods as well. Excessive sugar, excessive alcohol, that's a very common thing. And it can obviously, as we just mentioned, damage your gut and cause poor health. But you can reverse that. You can make them get to that point of health. It's not like an overnight thing. Rome wasn't built in a day. It's got to be implemented. Habits have got to be formed. But then if you're consistent with good nutrition, it can repair.
Yeah. So Ash, and a lot of people will talk about elimination diet, which I always cannot understand because, you know, okay, I'll eliminate that for a little while. Then I'll make a food diet, I'll eliminate that. And I think the best thing to do is go cold turkey. And this is where I would consider, in my case, I'm quite biased towards that, I would consider going completely carnivore as near as damn it. Because that will eliminate all the shite that I spoke about, won't it? Mm,
yeah.
You know, we're designed to eat the animal, tongue to tail. I would go, and that will eliminate everything straight away. And I'm doing it with a few people at the moment, and it works really, really well if they adhere to it. So that the elimination diet we can talk about, but generally I don't believe in it at all. If you're going to do bitty, just go cold turkey, eat animals only, as long as you digest them well, and we can talk about. So to answer the question about how to aid this digestion, which is a problem, you know, you can't just say eat animals, mate, you'll be fine, you know. So a couple of things you can do to help. Perhaps, as well as a good nutrition, perhaps take a digestive enzyme or HCL, and there's ways of doing that, and that might be for another podcast, Ash, because you can overdo it and then cause damage, but a digestive enzyme or HCL, and you can take up to, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 digestive enzymes. So you've got to be kind of careful, you know. And then to repair the gut wall, remember I spoke about this kind of leaky gut thing, to repair it, high-dose glutamine, L-glutamine, which is an amino acid, you can get it powder form. And people have got leaky gut, and very often they'll tell you, you know, I've got skin disorder, I've got lethargy, or you know, my brain's not working very well. I can't concentrate. I'm not pooing well. These are all indicators that perhaps you've got leaky gut. Digest. The next step is glutamine, and I take about 5 grams, so a teaspoonful, 4 or 5 times a day, and that, you know, it ain't doing harm, because after all, glutamine, sidetrack fact, glutamine is extremely useful for an immune function point of view. So not only does it help repair the gut lining, but also it's an immune function point of view. That's why when you get sick prolonged, you know, your arms and legs get skinnier because the body is getting glutamine out of your muscle to feed its immune system. So I'm getting it. So actually, also from a bodybuilder point of view and strength point of view, glutamine is useful post-workout. I ask people to take it post-workout. And it's also glycogen sparing, glucose sparing, but I'm going on. So digestive enzyme supplement, if you wish, and most of us could do with it, glutamine, and then maybe for a little while, broad spectrum probiotic, just to reproliferate the lower intestine.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't take it all the time, you know, because otherwise who's to know what, you know, because in that bottle you get XYZ probiotics. Who's to say that's correct? You know, that's why a broad spectrum one for a couple of weeks, then stop. And then maybe change, you know. So I'm not saying have, because otherwise you'll overload yourself with the maybe bacteria that doesn't necessarily want.
Yeah.
See, so you have to be kind of careful. And then, you know, you can things like, you know, bone broth contains glycine, which is extremely useful from a gut health point of view. And then the final probably part of the healing of the gut would probably be fasting. And I would say that a fairly decent fast of, you know, up to maybe 36 hours, certainly 20 hours would be the minimum, really, I'd say. But a longer fast will repair the gut lining because it's autophagy, you know, it's one of the things it'll do is it will repair the gut lining, which is, after all, what you're trying to do, you know, it regenerates autophagy. And very often, if you look in the toilet bowl when you're fasting, you might, you know, there might be a bit of kind of mucusy stuff. If you're worried about it, there's the whole risk of cancerous risk. And, I'm not qualified to talk about that. But from a mucusy point of view, it's not a bad thing. It's just the cell stomach wall being kind of regenerated, as far as I can tell. So there would be the points, mate, I would say.
Yeah, that's cool. And on the probiotics, I remember I used to train a doctor. And she wasn't a nutritionist. She had knowledge on the body was amazing. Obviously being a consultant, And she actually made me realize about this, about probiotics, because we're talking about nutrition. And I wasn't advising she takes a probiotics, but it just fell into conversation. She said, well, the problem with those is most of the time they don't get past your stomach because they've been made cheaply, mass produced. They're sold to like this healthy little magical thing, like healthy bacteria that we all need. But she says, when you drink it, it doesn't make it past the stomach acid. So with probiotics, they are commonplace. You can buy them, pick them up on the shelf in the supermarket, for example. What's your advice on that? Obviously, they got a benefit, haven't they?
Yeah, well, they haven't. They haven't. But she's right insofar as the cheaper ones, and very often the other cheap ones, they might even, they're live bugs, aren't they? Right. Mm. But some of them, they're dead in the bottle. You know, so they're, you know, yeah. So that's the point. So you got to be careful, and that will cause a further endotoxemia. You know, which is another thing that causes inflammatory response. I wanted to say endotoxemia for a long time, haven't I, Ash?
Yeah, well done, well done. We got it in there.
Yes, thank you very much. Anyway, so you kind of get what you pay for, and so you can either supplement with a good quality, broad spectrum probiotic, which has been proven to be alive through the gut acid. And or indeed fermented food is arguably just as good. So things like sauerkraut, you know, the blue bit in blue cheese and fermented food, even people talk about really good quality apple cider vinegar can help produce butyrate and stop the insulin response from carbohydrate meals, and you know, a host of things. So you can either supplement with it, good quality, occasionally, keep it in the fridge, by the way, or fermented sauerkraut, kimchi, fermented food, that type of thing is also useful, because that's the whole, you know, that's how it's been made via probiotics, by bugs.
And what about your, you know, I mentioned like sauerkraut and stuff like that, but then there's other foods that can be really recommended for gut health, like stuff like spirulina and stuff like that as well.
I don't see any problem with spirulina, especially although it's disgusting. And spirulina is made from algae, you know. Mm-hmm. So in fact, it's an animal, kind of an animal produce, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's algae, you know. So half an hour, I'm probably getting in trouble for saying that. But so I don't think there's any problem. And also, it's high in protein, you know, from a gut health point of view. And also, it's very kind of good from a, you know, people talk about, like you said, the liquid diets, and they have initially they have a point, because they're cleaning out your gut, but they're only cleaning out the gut, they're not actually repairing the gut, as far as I can see. But like spirulina, if you add that to the mix of a protein shake, I think that's probably a very good idea. And it's also very good for the thyroid, because it's seafood, you know. From a probiotic point of view, I can't answer, really. I don't know.
No, that's cool. So let's draw a line under it a little bit with bullet pointing, and I want to talk about fasting very quickly as well. So foods to improve is just, again, it goes back to the same theme of animal products, meat, fish. I know you talk about tongue to tail and stuff like that as well. And I know some people go, oh, I'm not sure about that as well. But if you think about it, it's easy. Go to your local butchers. It's very easy to, you know, and you buy good quality meat, mince, sorry, and you're getting the other elements that you wouldn't normally consider eating coming into your body anyways. So just good quality meat is great. Fish is very useful as well. Small bit of vegetables as well to complement that, maybe. We won't go into the whole fiber topic. Fermented foods, yes, that's something that came up when I was looking, doing a bit of research as well. Very good to look into. If you want to improve your gut health, look into fermented foods. Very quickly, though, and another point you mentioned there was like, you get what you pay for. And that comes down to, I'm not talking about probiotics now, I'm talking about anything. You know, I know some people won't go to a local butcher's because it's deemed to be, it's more expensive than if I go up to Tesco's or something like that. But you get what you pay for, and that's the key. And you can't put a price on your health. And I think that's what people should understand. And actually, if you go to your local butcher's, yes, it might look a bit pricier at first, but when you actually balance things out a little bit for what you get, it's there or thereabouts. You're not spending much more. It's just having knowledge, I think, about what to ask for when you go to the butchers. So again, it's just having whole foods, isn't it? Your meat products, dairy, bit of vegetables, your gut will be healthy so long as you adhere to that day in, day out. You're not putting processed foods in your body. You're not putting in excess carbohydrates, which aren't necessary. You're not having excess alcohol. So again, it's things not in excess, basically, isn't it?
Yeah. I'll just touch quickly on that while you're gathering your thoughts, Ash, if I may. Just be wary of, if someone to ask me what vegetables would you eat?
Mm.
Weirdly, I would go down the more nutrient dense ones, the more like rice, potatoes, tuberous vegetables. Whereas mm. before, when I was only interested in fat loss, then I'd say, I'll have the leafy stuff. But yeah. actually, now I know more, the leafy stuff has to protect itself. Mm. And those protections is oxalates, phytic acids, lectins, and all that. And people, please Google it yourselves. So, you know, not to take my word for it, it's quite important that you understand. A little bit's fine, of course, but if that's all you're eating, leaves and vegetables, you will do yourself some damage ultimately. Mm. And the thing about meat and, you know, tongue to tail, that really is important to hammer that home, Ash, that, you know, don't just eat muscle meat. You need to eat the liver. Certainly the liver would be the key one, the kidneys, even the heart.
Yeah,
and you can mince them up and stir fry them, chuck them in the slow cooker with other meat, because that's where you get the nutrients. All the nutrients are from the tongue to tail of the animal.
Yeah,
all the including vitamin C. People think, oh, well, actually, you get your vitamin C from the liver as well. So all the nutrients come from the animal. Now, I'm not going to say carnivore's the best, but have a think about it.
I know. Do you know what? I just really wish that my great grandmother was still alive, because honestly. You sound like her when it comes to what I had to eat growing up as a kid, sort of thing as well. And it's not just my great grandmother. Yeah, it literally is. It's having, I think knowledge has probably been lost in nutrition because we're getting sold so many different things, whether it's selling a product or someone's belief or whatever it may be, but it can be so wishy-washy nowadays in terms of what is right and what is wrong. Whereas I reckon 50 years ago, it's pretty simple. Let's finish with fasting. Now, we did a podcast about fasting a few episodes ago. I really enjoy chatting about that with you. Since we've done the fasting one, I now do a fasting day once a week. My wife's done it as well. I actually really enjoy it. My wife's not so keen. She's actually doing it, to be fair. I mean, but we've got different outcomes. I mean, she's, and this is a question for another day, she's actually doing a fasting, but then going on a long run or something like that. So I think she's just trying to find that mentally feeling okay with no food in the system as such, but that's for another day. But fasting, the reason I'm doing it is not for weight loss side of things. It's for the health side. You know, we spoke about fasting, and whoever, and I know we got a lot of good feedback about that one. And if you haven't listened to our fasting podcast, go and give it a listen. There's lots of really great actionable points you can take. I now do it once a week. I have a meal at like 7 o'clock at night as my last meal, let's say on a Tuesday, and then I won't eat anything until Wednesday evening at the same time. So I'm doing a 24-hour fast once a week. I find it okay. It doesn't really affect me too much. And this is coming from someone who loves food as well. So the benefits from doing that, though, let's just hammer home how fast, I know you touched on it already, but like fasting can benefit digestive health, help repair gut lining and everything as well, can't it?
Yeah. So even taking it back to a simpler step, the very fact that you're not eating allows your bloody digestive system to relax a bit, you know? So actually that's something we put too much sexy stuff in, but actually just the body will go, oh, the digestive system will go, oh, I can relax a bit, which is massively important. Yeah. And it replicates what we're designed as hunter-gatherers to do. You wouldn't have eaten 3 times a day, 4 times a day, 5 times a day. Mm. You'd have eaten a lot and then fasted. And then when you woke up, you go, oh, I'm hungry. I'll go hunting again.
Mm.
So, you know, you would have been able to operate in a fasted state. But from a digestive point of view, fasting will kick in a thing called autophagy, which basically is repair. Mm. And it repairs all sorts of telomeres, longevity. But in this instance, it's repairing the gut lining. And, you know, if it repairs the gut lining, or it can actually, you know, as I say, you might poo a little bit out. Don't be freaked out by this. Just a mucusy discharge thing after about 24, 36 hours. That's not a bad thing, you know. So as I say, check out the podcast, but from our point of view, from digestion, it allows you to relax and recover the digestive system, which clearly is what we're designed to, not be eating food all the fecking time. And the fact that it repairs the gut lining is the most important kind of takeaways from this point of view as well,
mate. That's great. I think it's a nice summary of what gut health should be. It comes down to diet. It comes down to what we put into our bodies. We shouldn't be following really any funky diets or anything like that. We shouldn't be eating food for the set goal of just being weight loss or something like that. The food we eat, even if you're eating these whole foods, will benefit weight loss. It will benefit muscle growth. You know, obviously the balances of what you're eating will change. But it comes down to, if you want a healthy gut, If you want a healthy digestive system, just eat natural foods. Don't eat processed foods. And we're not saying stop having takeaways, because I know you love a takeaway just like I do. But it's balance, isn't it? It's a case of just have one every now and then. Don't live on them once, twice, three times a week, which I have seen people do. Stress, obviously, massive factor. Again, we've touched on stress. So get your nutrition right. Try not to stress out as much. And I know that's easier said than done. Just don't stress, and try and be a bit mindful. We've talked about that as well. I think that was our first podcast we did, stress and anxiety hacks, grateful logs and stuff like that as well. And that's it really, isn't it? It's a case of just trying to be mindful in yourself, aware of what you're eating, and listen to your body a little bit, and try fasting. You know, fasting, I think it sounds weird for me to say from someone who loves eating food, I've quite enjoyed, I guess it's the challenge of not eating for 24 hours and the sense of, yeah, it is. I think like after 24 hours, I feel like I've achieved something, you know?
Yeah. But actually it's proven this, it has a certain mental clarity to it. You know, people talk about if you're fat adapted, you can focus more when you're fasted, which makes sense. Remember, because when you're hungry, ghrelin, and your sensory perception is improved when you're fasted, if you're fat adapted, which makes sense. I'm hungry, I'm hunting, I want to be able to see better, hear better, smell better. So therefore, that's why you've got clarity of thought when you work operating on ketones. Yeah. That's for another story. But I just want to point one little thing, Ash, if I may, is when we talk about the autoimmune function of leaky gut and the body going, it starts Pac-Maning all the nasty nutrient or nasty things that have gone into my bloodstream. One of the things that helps inflammation calm down is fish oil. So, that's one of the other kind of supplementary type things you might want to consider. Either eat loads of oily fish or indeed take some fish oil. And I normally ask people to take about 2 teaspoonfuls a day, or maybe 3, keep it in the fridge. Even my kids, who are coming in about 2 minutes, they're 6 and 10. I give them a tablespoon of fish oil every day. That's a tablespoon, little kids. So anyway, that's my point. So it can help inflammation as well as improve brain function.
Yeah, well, and again, I think it ties on to, and I know we've got a podcast coming up about supplements, where we can like go in a little bit more about the benefits of fish oils. Protein shakes, just to end there, because I know we did mention it today. Nothing wrong with taking a protein shake. Again, try not to go and spend loads of money on mint choc chip flavored ones and stuff like that. It's always advised, isn't it, to make up your own. I know I just use unflavored whey, and I add my own flavorings. I'd normally have it with something like a banana or something like that, or maybe a few berries just to give it a bit of flavor. But again, protein shakes aren't bad for you. We'll discuss protein shakes a lot more about, because there's a lot of misconceptions about protein shakes, from a female side of things. And this is coming from my own experience, not just with clients, but with my own wife, that they think if they're going to have a protein shake, all of a sudden their muscles are going to start bulging all over the place. It's not the case. If it was, it would be worth millions.
I wish it was, mate.
Yeah, exactly. But we'll touch on that a bit more. But again, just in terms of digestion, you don't want to, and it goes back to what we said earlier, you don't want to rely on protein shakes as a supplement for food because of the impact on the digestive health, isn't it?
Well, yeah, mate, but it's also, as I say, the crappy ingredients for a start. And also because it's remember that insulin thing, protein shakes are designed to be absorbed really quickly into the bloodstream, which is kind of what sugar does, although it's protein. So as an insulin, people don't realize, but protein in liquid form is really insulinogenic, and you want to avoid that throughout the day. Maybe after training, pop up insulin via protein in a shake form. People think it's just sugar, it's not. Anyway, that's a whole new subject. We'll talk about that
that'd be quite good on that. It's good. And again, it's where most people should be using protein shakes anyway, post-training. Get a shot of protein in you, help growth and repair, move on with your day. And then your next meal should be whole foods, basically, shouldn't it? Anything else to add that you want to add? Actually, one more question I have for you relates to stomach acid as well, the old acid reflux that a lot of people get, normally around stress as well. I've had it occasionally sort of thing in my life, and it normally comes down to not eating the right foods or stress being involved. Anything you can add on that, the whole stomach reflex where you feel your acid in your throat sort of area,
I'll make it quick because I think I hear the cut. But so stomach acid is important to break down food in the stomach, right? But when you've got a lack of stomach acid, what can happen is undigested food particles will come back up your esophagus.
Yeah.
So people think it's too much stomach acid. Actually, it's not. It's the opposite. It's not enough stomach acid. So it's not breaking it down optimally. Therefore, the pylori valve doesn't open and do all its things. So one of the ways to combat acid reflux is actually to take stomach acid, as in to take HCL. And my little, I know about this quite a lot because my little boys had exactly that, this, and but, you know, you can mask it a little bit by taking antacid, you know, these whatever they call Reni or whatever the hell it is, and omeprazole. But actually, in the long term, first of all, get life and don't be so stressed all the time. But adding digestive enzymes or HCL in most cases will reduce stomach acid, as in acid reflux. So it's counterintuitive. But please, once again, I urge people to check that out. You know, antacids will simply dampen it, but to help it, add HCL to your supplemental regime for a short period. Obviously, you don't have to do it all the time.
Mate, that's brilliant. And I know we discuss all of this. You kind of teach it a lot more with our nutrition course as well. So again, not to plug a course, but I guess I am. But that would be a nice little one for people to, if they are interested in this sort of stuff, for themselves, for their clients. That's what that course is all about, that advanced nutrition course that we're putting together. Anything you want to end on, mate?
Just the final thing is, the very first thing we said was, we are what we eat. Is probably not quite correct. We are what we assimilate. So that's quite an important thing.
James, as always, thanks for your wisdom and advice. It's been really good. It will lead on to, again, we've mentioned supplements a little bit today, so maybe we can, over the next few podcasts in the series, we can look at supplements a little bit more. And I think that the go-to supplements are protein, creatine, multivitamin stuff, but then bringing in stuff like digestive enzymes into that podcast might be really useful, and HCL and stuff like that. So thanks very much, mate. It's been a pleasure.
Great talking to you, mate. You take care, and I'll see you in a couple of days, no doubt.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Take care. See you soon. Jesus. Thank you, mate. Thanks for listening to today's podcast about gut health. For more content that we deliver, both James and I, you can head over to James's website, which is www.precisionperformance.co.uk, or you can head over to our website, which is www.performancetrainingacademy.com. We mentioned a couple of times that podcast about the advanced nutrition course that James has helped us deliver. You can find out more details about that as well by going to our website. As always, please subscribe to our podcast channels, and we'd really appreciate it if you can give us a review. It would really help grow our online presence and help get our content out to more people. Thanks for listening.